We back on Canuck Central. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. This hour brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Boston Canadian or Coors Light plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Let's bring in our next guest. He's the goalie guru in Goal Magazine and covering the Canucks at NHL.com, and he is a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. It is Kevin Woodley. What's happening, Woodley?
Oh, I don't know if I should tell you guys this, but I'm basically at a bridal store where I'm going to be watching my daughter try on her prom dress. So,
Oh yeah, my goodness.
These are exciting times. So if you hear a gasp, that's me hitting the floor wondering where the rest of the material is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be a tough one for a father.
But you know the toughest one is it's my youngest, so this is it, right? Like graduate and move on and, you know, empty nest. But, you know, we can go through my trauma and have a psychology session later. Let's get to the Canucks.
I was going to say, my nephew, I got a picture from my sister last week. My nephew had played his final hockey game or final minor hockey game, and I'm like, man, feels like yesterday this kid was like 10 years old. Now here he is finishing up his hockey career.
We get old fast, and do they.
It's pretty clear, yeah.
Yep.
All right, now that we've depressed everybody, let's get more depressing. The Canucks. it's been a tough restart since the break. And a lot of the same issues, right, with the offense. The defense is what they're clinging to right now as a team. Brock Besser mentioned it in a piece with IMAC today, how much better they continue to play defensively over the last couple of weeks. Rick Tocchet is holding to that as well. And it's true. It's not wrong that they have played much better defense. It's just they can't play good defense and generate any kind of relevant offense at the same time, it seems like.
You know what? Honestly, I don't know if I'd go that far.
They got goalied
in Vegas. Okay. They got goalied in Vegas, especially in the third period. And you know, maybe you don't love that the push is late in that game, but they generated more than enough quality-wise. Like, they got goalied big time. I don't have it in front of me, but when I looked it up the other day, like they were well over four in expected goals. So as much as the focus was on Lankin and keeping them in early, and he absolutely did, they generated enough to more than tie that game. So, and then, you know, the next night they didn't. You're right. Like, nothing. Barely over a goal in expected offense. And I think what that points to, along with the, the defensive play, is how hard they have to work, especially without Quinn Hughes, to generate that offense. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not coming easy. There's not a lot of free ones. They're not trading chances. They're not generating a ton off the rush. Like, it's a grind. And so on the second half of back-to-backs, and maybe in the first period of that game in Vegas coming off a break where they're trying to find their legs, like, without that work rate, it disappears. Mm-hmm. So I'm not as concerned about the Canucks form right now as a team, especially when I look at how much more and better connected they are from defense to offense amongst all five guys in their transition, in their defensive play, and in their ability to transition up the ice. Like, I see a way more connected group right now, and I know the results haven't been there for the first two out of this break, but like I said, I didn't mind the Vegas game, even if it took them a while to get going. I think the second half of back-to-back is, you know, again, the just how hard it is for them as currently constructed to generate. There's a grind element to it. And I think, you know, if we see Quinn back in the lineup tonight, that's where things start to shift, right? Because he tilts the ice when he's out there and he alleviates some of that pressure to grind every goal out and win every game 2-1. And so this is hard to say. Coming off two straight losses and out of the playoffs, and I know the market tends to react to what have you done for me lately, but I really don't mind their game at all right now. And I know it's not pretty, and I know it's not fancy, and I know there's not a ton of offense, but the way they're playing and the connected nature from forward to D, that frankly was missing for a large chunk of this season. It was one of the things I talked a lot with guys about before they went on this trip, sort of as everyone else was at Four Nations. I think they've reestablished that. And I think the results will come as it keeps moving forward if they keep playing like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, I think, the best case scenario is it turns into offense and you see a guy like Elias Pettersson get going, right? I mean, could you get a player like him get going if in general everybody's more connected and guys are in their spots? And I know we're grasping at straws here to find ways to get Pettersson going, but I'm just wondering if a team plays cleaner, it should help all players, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it should, yeah. Right? Like it should. If they play cleaner, play more connected, have the puck more, I mean, get out of their end more easily. I don't know that it solves the mystery of where his speed went. If they start transitioning easier, can they turn that into some rush offense that's kind of been missing all year? I don't know if it solves that. Like if the burst is gone and it's not coming back, I don't know that it solves that part of it. I don't know that all of this gets him out of his slump. I just, when I look at how they're playing as a whole, recognizing the limitations, especially if he doesn't come out of it, of this lineup, and especially if you do end up trading a Besser, I mean, not a lot of top six forwards on this team to start with right now, so to lose one would be problematic. It doesn't mean it fixes everything because there are offensive limitations here, but at least I like the way they're playing. And up until, say, the last 10 games or so, frankly, I wouldn't have said that very often this season.
Yeah, and I hope you're right. I'm tired of watching these 2-1 games a little bit, but
it's not sexy, but it's got teeth, as there was an old Tom Cruise line from some movie. Maybe it was Accountants in that one.
Yeah. You mentioned Brock Besser. What do you think is the play here? Obviously, you know, they're amidst a negotiation. Canucks want Besser at a certain number and certain term, and Besser is going to try and get as much as he thinks he's worth out of this negotiation. Where do you see this end up by the end of next week?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball to see where they settle, but it's pretty clear where the divide is, right? Like Brock's made it clear. He made it clear to Ian McIntyre the other day. He made it clear to us when the discussion was had, you know, again, sort of in that little gap where they were practicing coming out of the Four Nations. He discussed this during a session with the media then, that like he's made it clear throughout he wants to stay. So it's going to come down to, negotiations require deadlines. We have one coming up, and it's basically going to come down to how much does he want to stay? How much is he willing financially, and especially when it comes to term on the finances? How much of a haircut is Brock Besser willing to take to remain a Vancouver Canuck? And I think at the end of the day, that's their bet, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Their bet is right. Like, you know, like you're sort of playing a little game of chicken here. It's a negotiation, and your pressure point is until March 7th. So does that mean I'm optimistic? No, because it's got to have been hard for him to sit there as the longest tenured Canuck and everything he's done for this team and watch them re-up Lincoln and sign Drew O'Connor, sign Marcus Pettersson. Like, that can't be easy, and maybe that makes it harder for him to stay, to settle for less when it comes to term. But right now, when he says he wants to be here, I believe him, and it's just going to be a matter of, can they bridge that gap enough that he's comfortable signing to do so?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think we'll see what happens here over the next few days. We didn't get a chance to ask you about Kevin Lankinen's contract because he signed at the end of last week, and this is the first time for us chatting with you. What do you make of the number, and ultimately what it might mean for the goaltending duo beyond this year?
Well, I mean, first off, actually, I'd want just to go back to Besser for a second.
Yeah,
sorry, I was distracted. The dress is stunning. just breaking hearts everywhere here, including
proud dad moment.
Yeah.
I do think one of the things that's puzzled me with Besser is, I don't want to say misused, but I feel like he's been underused and maybe not used in the best way sometimes this year on the, like, and we, the irony is we heard talk about this, like that, how good he is down low and in front of the net, and how, you know, I've dug up the numbers and have shared them in the past, like elite net front guy last year, and we just see him on the flank too often. And so, I just haven't seen him. I don't know that they've used him, frankly, to his strengths all this season. Now to switch over to Lankinen, good for him. Bet on himself. Deserves it. Played really well. Do you want to be the team that's like, I make the Charlie Lindgren comparison, and by all reports, Lindgren was going to go in for about 3.5 to 4. with Washington. That was a number sort of I had in mind for Lankin, and obviously it wasn't going to be enough to get it done, and clearly it wasn't because they spent a lot more than that. As a matter of fact, I think the Lindgren negotiations might be complicated by the Lankin contract. My point beyond is it more than I expected is you'd prefer to be the team that bought Kevin Lankin in for multiple years at his ask in the summer of 2-2.5 range than the like Washington did with Lindgren. Like, you want to be the team that buys Charlie Lindgren at 1.3 for 3 years and gets number one level goaltending out of him. And so that's the only sort of caution here. And it's not even a caution, just sort of as much as they deserve credit for signing him and getting him at a number this year, a really reasonable number and effectively saving their season. You know, if you believed in him that much, you could have had him for a lot longer for a lot less. And so, you know, that's sort of where some of the margins that you can win on in this league. As far as what he means and what it means for the future of the goaltending, like, I still see growth in his game. I think he's still, and he talked about this a little bit, some of the changes he's made with Marco Turanius and the comfort they have working together. Like, he still sees upside. I think as long as they don't overplay him, he's performed at kind of a level that we saw the last couple of years in Nashville, except he's able to do it playing more of a 1A type role. Like, he's able to be and proven that he can be a starting goaltender, especially the way he bails them out with the high danger stuff early. Like, that's been a big part of this season and saving their season. So he's fully capable of it. What it means beyond next year, though, like, it's kind of hard to look at the two of them and say, like, if Demko has a good summer, comes back and has a healthy year, he's an 8.25 guy. Do we see this management group, based on its history, spending $13 million on goaltending?
No, I don't.
Probably not. So that's like it's not complicated. That kind of gives you your answer right there, doesn't it? Because Lankinen's got a no move for the first two.
Yeah, and it does feel like, you know, this gives them security around Demko, gives them options around Demko if they want to explore the trade market in the summer, or, you know, you go into
it. If he gets healthy this year and comes off of this injury, and I don't think it's going to be too much longer. I do believe it's just a soft tissue thing. It's not a joint related thing. That he'll be back soon, and if he can find that form. Like, the other thing it gives them is, like, one of the best tandems in the entire NHL for the rest of this season if he's healthy, and potentially for next year at a very reasonable rate.
Yeah.
Beyond that, there's bigger questions. But I don't, you know, it's really the temptation is just to focus on, well, this must mean Demko's on after next year, if not sooner. But in the short term, it gives you something that they've relied upon for a long time in this market, and that is elite goaltending, and it gives them that no matter who's in net.
Yeah, and it feels like the other part of it is, like, it feels like both guys want to be number ones, right? And Lankinen is he's going to have a career high in starts this year. That's pretty obvious at this point. He's coming up on the number already. And Demko, you know, he sort of alluded to it a couple of weeks ago when he was struggling and he was really starting to find his game a little bit, that it's been an adjustment having to share the net with somebody for the first time in a long time.
Well, I mean, the reality of today's game is nobody, like, you can count on one hand the guys that are playing 60, right? So you need to. And so, I mean, look at Lindgren and Logan Thompson. As much as they committed almost 6 to Logan Thompson, they're still looking at 4. Like, they're looking at a $10 million tandem, and they're going to be happy with it. So, you know, the starter backup role, I mean, at the end of the day, both of them want to play more. Sure. I don't think it's a coincidence that the only thing that's keeping Kevin Lankinen's numbers from being where they were last season statistically, because they're not, like, his adjusted numbers, they're good, but they're not as good as they were the 2 years in Nashville. And that's the games where the bottom has kind of fallen out. There's been a couple of them. And some of it is the team in front of him some of those nights. But, you know, I think of the Edmonton game. I think of it's usually when he's playing too much. And so that has to be something that you take note of here, whether it's Thatcher Demko or someone else. You know, this is not a situation where at 4.5, you're locking a guy in to be a 65-game starter. So you're going to need a 1A, 1B situation, whether it's with these two or with Lankinen and somebody else, like you're going to need more quality starts. Mm-hmm. That's just a trend around the league, unless you have a Shesterkin, a Saros, a Hellebuck. And that's a pretty damn short list.
And as far as Demko is concerned, he might be able to return to practice when the team comes back. If that does happen, is that like the best case scenario as far as his return from his latest injury?
I don't know if there's been an update there. When they told us he was out for the trip, they said he'd be reevaluated sort of around the March 1st, around the Seattle game. You know, my understanding is it is not a serious injury as much as people say 3 weeks is serious. And so it could be, you know, it could indeed be sooner rather than later, but we'll have to wait and see, right? Like he's got to be comfortable coming back and comfortable that when he comes back, and you could maybe even make the argument even more so since the Lankinen contract, comfortable that when he comes back, it's for good.
Yeah.
Kevin Woodley, our guest. Artur Shilov's looked good in his return to the big league club. Played Sunday against Utah, and Rick Tocchet saying today that he's got confidence in putting him back in the net for the back-to-back tomorrow against Anaheim. We talked about this a little bit last week in the wake of the Demko injury, just how much strides he's made. But what are you seeing now that he's played the one game back at the NHL level?
Well, that was a lot of pressure, right? Like, I don't think people realize how much pressure was on that start for Artur Shilov, because like you said, like even the fact that they were contemplating, despite what I just said about Lankinen and what happens when you play him too much, the fact they were even contemplating coming out of the break and playing him back to back told you there was some uncertainty. I mean, at the end of the day, by the time they sent Shilov down to the minors, there seemed to be a sort of a loss of trust. You know, I remember it had gotten to the point where, like, can we play this guy, right? So now you can. And so that was a pressure-packed start, and what I loved, and we shouldn't be surprised because he's always risen to pressure, but what I loved was I thought his game looked quieter. There was a lot less extra movement in it. There was a patience on the skates. Even when plays were down and around the net and behind the net, he didn't default into post-play prematurely. A lot more patience, a lot more control. There's still some things on shots from distance and traffic, and the reality is that's just going to take time and experience for him to be completely comfortable at the NHL level with those elements. You know, there's the one that went off the mask where there's some mechanics-ish things there in terms of how he goes to the ice that takes his head off pucks, that sort of takes him, visually detaches them as they're on their way, and that can... that's why that hits your mask on a puck that you've got clear sight pretty much all the way through. So it's not perfect, but I was just really impressed given the pressure of the situation for him personally, that he was able to play him and really make some really difficult saves, breakaways, one-on-ones, pop passes. Thought he was, again, not down early into his post integration, pop passes into the middle where he's up top of the crease, square set, not the biggest goalie, but played bigger. I thought there's a lot to like in his game, and given where he's at personally and the stakes of it, I think that says a lot.
How was that for vindication for Jordan Binnington in the final?
that wasn't bad, eh?
Yeah.
Especially that overtime.
Yeah, the overtime was the pièce de résistance. Like at the end of the day, when we talked about Shilov and how we were not surprised that he rose to the moment, because for all the questions about elements of his game and things he still has to learn, big moments are not an issue. The same is true of Jordan Binnington. Like, and this was a guy who, as I said before, like, has his season been great? Is it good statistically? Was he top three amongst Canadian goaltenders going into it? Absolutely not. But, sorry, guys, the dress store is in New Westminster here. So as we walked out, we walked right into a SkyTrain. But in the previous five seasons, no goalie from Canada was top 10 in the league in adjusted save percentage. Jordan Binnington was. Like, he deserved the opportunity. And I think the fact that he played that way in overtime, that he wasn't, like, that he showed he was so unflappable, sort of backed up why. And I think the other part that even I missed going into it was how important his puck handling was, how crucial that was, to them getting out of their own end cleanly against a big physical American forecheck. And it's not just the simple little plays that he makes with the puck. It's how many he gets to. And it's really hard to do a comparison, you know, without a deep dive video-wise, but just talking to goalie coaches around the league, he gets to so many more pucks than most goalies on dump-ins, sometimes aggressively to the point of making you nervous, like pucks on rims that are up on the glass. But that was a massive difference maker for Canada in that tournament. Not just the plays he made, but the pucks he stopped behind the net, even just for a leave, that 9 out of 10 goalies in the NHL don't even try to get.
It was unbelievable. And now he's put himself back on the radar, potentially for teams looking for a goalie ahead of the trade deadline. Woodley, we always appreciate the time. Thanks so much for this today.
I apologize for the background noise, including the sound of my jaw hitting the floor once you walked out in the dress. But I appreciate you guys' patience today.
You held it together. It was very impressive. Under pressure, you held it together.
I'm going to go take her for dinner now and have myself a little cry.
That is Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com. He is on every single Wednesday here on Canuck Central.
Yeah, and you know what he mentioned on Demko is kind of something that I heard as well, that for all the jokes about, you know, it's not that serious. Like, they don't believe it is serious. It is a few weeks. It's not like long term, right? And I heard that there's a chance he's back skating with the team when they return next week. And I think that would alleviate some concerns to some degree. But, you know, we'll wait and see here, right?
It really comes down to perception. When people heard Rick Tocchet say it's not that serious, they assumed day to day. And really, it's just a short term injury.
Yeah. What I heard was it just needed a little bit of time.
Yeah.
But then once you're past that, it shouldn't be an issue. Now, obviously, they don't give us any details. Mm-hmm. We'll see ultimately what happens. But to me, what's going to be interesting is, will he return to skating? Like, I've heard he's been on the ice here and there, but like, is he actually going to return to practice with the team when they come back? And if he does, then that puts it at a good timeline. You know, we were a bit concerned about how long is he going to be out with these back-to-backs. Maybe all you need, Shelov's, is to have the two starts.
Yeah.
The one he had the other night and the one coming up tomorrow in Anaheim.
And I mean, we'll see, because it took Demko quite a bit. Now, different, obviously, the length of injury was 8-9 months that he was off the ice with the knee injury that stopped his start to the season and ended his season last year, took him out of the playoffs. So, yeah, it took him a while to get comfortable enough to go into a game. You know, he backed up a couple of times before actually getting a start. People were wondering about that. So I guess, you know, that's something to see once Demko gets back on the ice. But all in all, a fairly good news bit on Thatcher Demko. There is a trade in the National Hockey League.
Oh, okay.
Involving a former Canuck.
Yes. It's not very big.
It is not big.
No.
Major!
Tyler Madden traded to the Minnesota Wild from the LA Kings for defenseman Joseph Ciccone.
Okay, all right, trivia question here, and you as well.
Oh, Costa is you.
Yes, Costa.
You
as well. I was gonna
you.
I was going to say you as well, Costa, because I was looking at Costa, so I was pointing at him, and you as well, Costa. Josh and Dan.
Yes.
How many NHL games do you think Tyler Madden has played?
I want to say 32.
Okay. Costa?
12.
Dan?
I don't remember him playing in a game. I don't think he ever... Did he ever get called up?
Yeah, has he played a game?
It's zero.
Oh. Is it zero?
Yeah.
I thought he got called up at one point, for sure.
He may have been called up, but he didn't play.
Fair enough.
Can't believe they traded this guy for Tyler Toffoli. Unbelievable. Oh. Yeah, so Tyler Madden traded to the Minnesota Wild. Maybe he'll get that NHL debut now. He's 25 and has played a few years with the Ontario Reign. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Coming up, we've got overrated, underrated. Denny's True North Taste awaits with Denny's 100% Canadian beef burgers, made with new shredded iceberg lettuce on a brioche bun and all the classic ingredients you love. Denny's overrated, underrated is next on Canuck Central.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People's Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.